This is Greg Olson, here to tell you about my new podcast, TE1. On the show, I had a chance to talk to my fellow tight ends who have revolutionized the position from an extra lineman to a dual threat superstar. And just like my guests have changed the game, this year, NFLSundayTicket.tv is revolutionizing your NFL viewing experience. Stream all the live out-of-market NFL games every Sunday on your favorite devices and never miss a moment from your favorite players. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use the promo code GREG88 at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. That's NFLSundayTicket.tv and the promo code GREG88. Subscribe to TE1 and get NFLSundayTicket.tv, an unmatched dual threat.
And here's Fox creeping forward. He pulls up, 18-footer. De'Aaron Fox puts the Kings on top. Fakes once, fakes twice. Gives to Belly. 35-foot three for the win. Nemanja Bjelica.
We deserve this win, man.
When we're done, we go chop it up, eat, right. Golf, whatever you want to do. Before these 48 minutes, I ain't about them games.
Welcome back to another episode of the King's Pulse podcast. And real quick, before we get into it, I just want to say anybody that's being affected by these fires going on in California to stay safe out there. But yeah, for now, we're going to keep some content rolling for everybody here. My name is Brendan Nunes. Got Rich Ivanowski on here, as we always do. What's going on, Rich? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. I was spent the morning outside, and yeah, it's not a great situation. Definitely praying for those that are affected right now. I know we got some people over at King's Herald that have family that lives close to what's going on there. The fires really, it covers the whole state sometimes, and hopefully that won't happen again. But on a lighter note, we're here today to talk about basketball, of course, and I'm very excited to welcome in our guest, Jonathan Macri. How are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great. I also want to send my, good vibes I could send to the people affected over there. I also want to congratulate you guys on the King's Herald. I don't know if you know this, there's a site that just launched yesterday here in New York called the Strickland, which is a bunch of the posting and toasting guys who were under the SB Nation umbrella kind of took inspiration in part from the King's Herald to go and form their own site. And yeah, I'm actually contributing there like a bit here and there. So it's an awesome thing that you guys did.
That's super rad.
I saw that site. I didn't realize that's what it was.
It's Nick's coverage. Is basically all those guys are kind of went and like, hey, we could do this, and they did.
Yeah, they deserve it, man. It's tough sometimes to work for those bigger sites, and it definitely seems like Vox is steering away from the individual voice, and that's tough to see, but. People take the initiative, it's always going to pay off. So definitely going to be rooting for you guys and following along there. The reason we brought you in today in particular is because of Scott Perry, who is getting all types of buzz and hype about this new opening as GM of Sacramento Kings. Brendan, do you want to break down like exactly what we've been hearing and who we've been hearing this buzz from?
Yeah, I have there was a big piece from, right before we started this, we had a debate on if it's Shams or Shane. What is it? What is the way that you think it is here, Rich? Because you have been correcting me.
I've heard it as Shams, Shania, and now I looked it up and it says Shams. I honestly don't know if it's Shams, Shania or Shams, Shania.
It sounds like he says Shams when he says it. But that may just be his accent, because I inevitably say Shams, but just that's my instinct.
I could totally be wrong here.
But yeah, a piece from Shams and Amick that came out recently, talking about the GM opening, saying that the relating to Perry, quotes I have here, sources say that there has been a swell of support both internally and externally for former Kings Vice President of Basketball Operations Scott Perry. Also, Ron Adibe and Perry, sources say, are known to be on very good terms and have kept in touch since their time together came to an abrupt end after 3 months. I was surprised to see Perry's name thrown out here a bunch. Was it the same for you, John, to see his name floated around for the Sacramento job?
Well, it depends on when. I mean, before everything went down with Vlade and Peja, I was not expecting his name to come up in any jobs, because he had just signed, basically agreed to continue as the GM for the next year. There was some talk about that he signed a 1 year extension, but the reporting on that, and I have not been able to get a clear answer either, because there was a mutual option for the season. So if you're like, okay, he signed an extension, does that mean he's on here for two more years? In any case, you know, the talk around here was that he was excited to, you know, be on board with Leon Rose, that there was a good working relationship there. Initially he was, you know, it would be more part of a team than, you know, him being the main decision maker. But then once Vlade, everything happened there, was I surprised to see his name in connection? No, I wasn't, because I think the situation there, and I'm sure we'll get into it, is maybe not going to be all too dissimilar from the one that he walked into here with the Knicks.
Yeah, there's obvious connections really throughout. I mean, obviously, so he was with the Kings for 3 months. Was that, I believe, I'm trying to find this here, was vice president?
VP of basketball ops, yeah.
Okay, so, and then he was, you know, he's credited as having a strong influence, and, you know, who really knows? That's kind of the problem here, but who really knows who influenced each move? But he's credited with having strong influence over the De'Aaron Fox pick, and perhaps the best 3 months of Kings executive decisions in quite some time. So there's obviously that link, but then also Joe Dumars was brought on as an advisor and is now conducting this search for a GM, and Perry was hired, I believe, his first executive job for the Pistons. He was hired by Dumars back all the way back in June of 2000. So connections definitely run deep.
Yeah, definitely. And yeah, we'll go through a lot of Perry's decisions here. And like you said, it does kind of start in 2000, his first job with Detroit as a scout for 2 years before he was upgraded in 2002 to director of player personnel for that team to 2007. And I'm just curious how much you guys put into this, because it was a very up and down time in Detroit for Joe Dumars, but Perry was really there for the good times for the most part. In 2004, the team made the Eastern Conference Finals, and then they made it every single year until he left. It's hard, obviously, to, you know, distribute credit in these front offices. And again, Perry's title for most of that time was director of player personnel. But you got to think of it as a little bit of a positive, being around what was like a championship environment and constant playoff team over and over, right? I mean, it's a good start and situation to be around to start out your career at the very least, right?
I mean, I think it's especially interesting to look back on in retrospect, you know, given if you look at the stops he's had since, there's, you know, and again, I'm sure we'll get into it a little bit more, but like the kind of a theme of just going out and getting veteran guys, even if, you know, veteran, like, quote unquote, win now players, even though it doesn't always seem like there's a light at the end of the tunnel. And sure enough, there was a light at the end of the tunnel in Detroit. But at the same time, it's interesting to look at that team as kind of like, in a lot of ways, you know, the anomaly of the last, I guess you'd say, four decades in the NBA, where, you know, obviously no top player and it kind of a mishmash of talent, but it worked there. And I've wondered myself, actually, does his experience there, you know, did it shape his decision, how he makes decisions and team building moving forward? Because I think there were some definite through lines throughout his career.
Yeah, and not being essentially the man in charge there, like it's hard to figure out what exactly he deserves credit for. I will say that is by far the most successful stretch for any team that he was a part of. I think he departed, let's see here, 2007, he departed the Pistons. And then really since then, hard to find a very successful organization that he's been a part of. And also he's been much higher up the ladder in terms of his position. You want to get into his next stint here, Brendan?
Yeah, I have a 2007-2008. He got assistant GM title out of that Detroit job in Seattle. And really, I mean, the notable thing here in that short run was drafting Durant second, which, you know, obviously it's Kevin Durant, but I think that was kind of a pretty obvious decision there. And I think where we really dive into it, and there is something to be said for just making the obvious pick. Sacramento fans are very aware of that one. But yeah, I think where you really start to dive into it and where I feel like he probably had a good say, and there's a little bit to go off of here, would be going back to Detroit in 2008, where he was the vice president of basketball operations. And, you know, kind of looking at some of these draft picks here are what I have laid out in front of me. And it's a little discouraging. You know, they're not amazing drafts necessarily, but like 2010 pick seven, he went with Greg Monroe. It's not terrible, but you did see, you know, Paul George go 10, Bledsoe 18. You don't knock them all too much for that, but then you have, you know, two more years after that where you're also in the top 10. In 2011 pick eight, Brandon Knight went, and you know, he had a good start to his career, but you saw Kemba go 9. Sacramento fans know Jimmer went 10, Clay 11. If you want to get a little layer, like Kawhi 15, Vucevic 16, Tobias Harris 19. Like, it's an all right pick, I guess. Not very inspiring, especially. And then again, you know, the next year you're still in this lottery. You have pick 9, where there was Andre Drummond selected. And also in the second round, they picked up Chris Middleton. But then not long after that draft, he found himself accepting the Orlando job. So I don't know how much I put into the Drummond and Middleton picks. And those are honestly his two most impressive picks during that stretch. So yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit of an uninspiring time that he spent in Detroit trying to go in a rebuild and seemingly not making all that much progress, right?
No, sorry. I was just going to say, it's like it again, like that late lottery range is like, if you look throughout where his teams, coincidence or otherwise, throughout his career happen to pick, it's like they're not bad enough to pick near the top, but they're, well, with it, except the next pick that we're going to talk about in Orlando, which that, again, that wasn't his team that finished, you know, with that terrible record. So he can't even take responsibility, but it's a lot of these like late top 10 picks where, you know, it's hit or miss.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously we can look at draft stuff first. I think that's timely considering today is lottery day. But there are other moves as well. Of course, you know, free agents, trades, all this. And ultimately, probably your yardstick at the end of the day is going to be, you know, wins and losses. And the Pistons really did not do great under him there. You know, 27 wins in 2009-10, 30 wins in 2010-11, 25 wins 11-12, 29 wins in 2012-13, before moving over to the Magic. And his time with the Magic, like, also not super encouraging, I'll say.
Yeah, and this is where I felt like we could dive into it a little bit here. And yeah, his role with the Magic, the title I found was Vice President of Basketball Operations and Assistant GM, where he took over in 2012. And one of the first moves there was the blockbuster Dwight Howard trade, where he received back Aaron Aflalo, Al Harrington, Mo Harkless, Vucevic, Josh McRoberts, Christian Ayanga, I believe is how you pronounce that last name, and then a slew of picks as well, that the picks didn't end up being all too much for them there. I guess, like, looking back in hindsight, it was a okay trade, just considering like how Dwight ended up working out after that. But at the time, Dwight was one of the best players in the league. He had requested out, so that lowers the trade value that you're obviously going to get in any move there. But kind of an uninspiring package. And interestingly, that trade that was a four-team trade kind of was a negative for all teams involved, aside from maybe, I believe it was Denver that ended up acquiring Andre Iguodala from the Sixers in that as well. So not an amazing move there, but it, again, I mean, similarly to how it was in New York, I believe he came into a situation with a superstar that was asking out. So he got a decent return for that.
And it is kind of funny looking back, like Vooch, I think you could probably argue, you know, he's been the best Magic player over the last 8 years, even though, you know, it took him a little while to get there. And if whether it's now, whether it's 6 months from now, whether it's a year from now, I think there's going to be a good argument that Mitchell Robinson, who was obviously picked with the selection that they got back in the Melo deal, might be, you know, the best asset he leaves behind with the Knicks. So it's like, he's again, not that it was a great trade, because like you said, Dwight Howard was still like an all NBA performer, and you would have thought maybe they could get something more. But you know, in retrospect, not terrible. They got a commensurate return, I guess. And again, hindsight being what it is,
right? And then there's guys like Oladipo that he drafted, who, you know, obviously became a very good player, but didn't realize that potential with the Magic. So hard to say if that worked out too great. And then Oladipo was traded around. So, but, you know, again, I'm just going by, if I'm looking at wins and losses, again, can be a little bit tough.
I just want to throw in real quick regarding the, you know, Oladipo. Like, looking back, I think it's pretty safe to say that Oladipo was the right pick. Obviously, he wasn't the best player from that draft because, you know, Giannis ended up going, whatever it was, 15th. But it's the trade, you know, him trading away Oladipo and Sabonis for Serge Ibaka on an expiring contract. It, like, that doesn't get talked about enough, I think, as one of the low-key, I don't know, five worst trades of the decade. And again, he wasn't the man in charge. It's impossible to say for sure, but he has gone on record many times and saying it's like, you know, nobody wins when you're trying to lose games. It's like, that's not a cogent organizational strategy. That was clearly a win now move that backfired in every way. It backfired in the talent that he was sending out. It backfired in the talent that he was getting in. And so that, you know, and then he had a kind of a love affair with Elfrid Payton, very athletic but flawed guard. Again, a kind of another Perry type. And that, you know, his obsession, I don't say obsession, but his interest in Payton followed him to New York, and it's like, you know, 0-2. So to me, looking back at his Orlando tenure, it was definitely a precursor to maybe some of the things that we've seen with him in charge in New York.
Yeah, right. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, you mentioned the Ibaka trade that was just horrific there, and then trading up to get Payton as well. He got rid of, or it was the pick that was Dario Saric,
yep.
And some additional assets moved up to get Elfrid Payton there. And then, you know, struck out pick five in 2015 as well with Hezonja, but not the best draft. Still not a good pick there. Like, Willie Cauley-Stein went 6, Turner 11, Booker 13. But yeah, I mean, it's really like, you look at this Ibaka move, like, because there was also Aaron Gordon we glossed over a little bit as well that I thought was a good pick. But yeah, I mean, Oladipo, Sabonis, if they were on this team as well, like, you got to think the Magic would be in a decent spot here. The Ibaka was flipped not all too long after. I'm actually unsure if this was during Perry's time. It might have been right after the end of it. But yeah, he was eventually flipped.
I think it was because Ibaka didn't even spend a full season there. They flipped him because their season obviously did not go the way they had planned, and they flipped him mid-year for Terrence Ross, who's been a nice player for them. But it's like, you know, they turned Depot
and Sabonis into Terrence Ross.
Into Terrence Ross, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, like, one positive trade I'll point out would be Aaron Aflalo for Evan Fournier. And Aflalo was a guy that, you know, was like a borderline all-star, and Fournier was kind of an up-and-coming guy that, you know, that had a lot of question marks at first, and it ended up working out pretty well for him, trading that back in 2014. But, yeah, doesn't override the poor moves that happened in Orlando. And yeah, I mean, I will say, like, again, without that Ibaka trade, I think Orlando would be in a nice spot. But again, I mean, this is the second team in a row that he went to and was sort of unsuccessful in doing a rebuild and kind of kept them, like you're pointing out, in that late lottery spot, right?
Yeah, and you know, it's like, it's, you know, and if I was to give like a theme to his record overall, and we, you know, we're getting into the Knicks now, so it'll become more clear. It's like, it, you could wake, you could make, be a win now GM in the NBA and value the notion of like winning games. And like, that's the best way to instill certain values in your young players and your roster and all that stuff. But you still need to competently put together that roster. And I think it was interesting in Orlando, like you look back and like, again, Aaron Gordon, talented player. Victor Oladipo, talented player. They had Vooch, talented player. Like, they had talent, but there wasn't that kind of deft touch that the best GMs have to take that talent and turn it into a cohesive unit. You know, and also, and I'm blanking at the moment, of course, on who the coach was for those Orlando teams, but, you know, it takes hiring the right coach as well. And it's like, I don't think they had, that was after the Stan Van Gundy years and before obviously Steve Clifford. But it's like, you know, it takes all the different pieces of the puzzle. Oh, that's right. It was, yes, it was Jacques Vaughn. And then Scott Skiles. So, you know, we'll see what Vaughn becomes as a coach, but hired a first time coach, guy had never coached before, very young coach, to try to put together these interesting pieces. Like, that's, you know, maybe in, again, in retrospect, was not the best way to go.
From tight muscles, tough workouts, signs of aging, to simply making it through each busy day, everyone understands what it feels like to be tense and sore. So everyone can benefit from TheraOne's CBD products. A lot of CBD products claim organic, but still contain up to 35% filler, and these fillers are potentially toxic. TheraOne tests their products 4 times before they get to you. Every product is USDA certified organic, grown in the US, and their CBD extracts are the highest quality available anywhere. And now, through Labor Day, Monday, September 7th, TheraOne is offering our listeners a buy one, get one free for all TheraOne products. But you've got to go to theragun.com/bluewire. If you don't love what you get from TheraOne, send it back for a full refund within 30 days of purchase. This is not something TheraOne is likely to do again. Buy one, get one free at Theragun, theragun.com/bluewire, but only until Labor Day. Go right now to theragun.com/bluewire.
And just to recap the Magic years in terms of wins and losses, not successful there. 20 wins, 23 wins, 25 wins, 35. And then I believe he was still there in 2016-17 when Frank Vogel became head coach and they won 29. Yeah, not good. I mean, that's, if we're stacking this up, we're up to 9 seasons of well below 500 basketball. And I just wanted to give a shout out to Mario Hezonja, who is not talked about enough, I think, as a failed top five pick. I know Perry later brought him into the Knicks, where I think, you know, his career highlight might have been that one dunk on Giannis. But, you know, outside of that moment,
well, the block on LeBron. And he blocked LeBron. Come on, James. Now, yeah,
okay,
the block on LeBron. It's a game-winning block right there.
He has those moments, but I mean, for a top five pick. And he's still 25 years old, I guess. But there's as many, you know, hits. There's been just as many misses, easily up to this point.
Yeah, and none of the teams turned around. You know, they still all kind of were looking for a rebuild. I guess Orlando's a little bit further along in it and like got some decent pieces from it. But yeah, I mean, uninspiring for sure. And then he does move over to Sacramento, where it's only a 3-month stretch. And, you know, you mentioned him selecting Fox towards the beginning there, or him being a part of that and rumored to be a
decent voice in that selection. And what I saw was that he was a big factor in landing Sacramento that workout. But, you know, we've pointed out that I don't know if I love the rest of the draft where Sacramento traded down from 10 to get 15 and 20, where they selected Justin Jackson and Harry Giles. Maybe we'd feel a little bit better if Giles was actually going to be on the team next year and not due to, you know, front office incompetence there. But and 15, Justin Jackson was traded for Harrison Barnes, who we like even despite that contract. But when you look at 10, you know, Donovan Mitchell, Bam Adebayo on the board, like some real game changers there. There's even a Jared Allen and an Obi a little bit later. So, you know, not the best draft. And then also the 2017 signings of George Hill, Zach Randolph. I mean, those are some questionable moves as well. So, I mean, I don't know how much I buy, like, he came to Sacramento and made a great difference in this offseason just because of the De'Aaron Fox pick, really. Right, Rich?
Yeah, it's definitely fair. And you can kind of, I mean, it's a little bit less clear, significantly, it's significantly less clear than the Durant pick in, you know, you pick second in a two-player draft. You know, you don't really want to give overwhelming credit for that pick back in 2007. But then you also look at this Fox pick, and a lot of people, at least the argument is, he was a consensus top five pick, and the Kings had a top five draft pick. It's not like he went out and found a diamond in the rough. Now, that's kind of an unrealistic expectation to do that every year or any year, but it's hard to gauge how much of a home run that is. And I wanted to ask you, Brendan, about the George Hill signing, because believe it or not, that's like the biggest signing in recent history for the Kings. And of course, he was gone very, very quickly. But the total of $56 million for him, I think that is actually the biggest free agent signing of an outside free agent being acquired by the Kings, possibly in history, definitely in the last 5 years.
It's interesting, like John pointed out, that, you know, it's kind of a win now move. I get the idea was to have a veteran presence for a somewhat young team. And I know Fox says that it was a nice veteran for him. But yeah, I mean, I feel like it's hard to not say that signing was a failure, really. You know, maybe Fox wasn't ready to take the reins year one. He was a pretty poor player in that first season that he had in Sacramento. So, I mean, it's hard to not say that was a bad deal. Like, I guess I see the logic behind it. And the Randolph one is just the really inexcusable one. Like, I kind of see the logic with George Hill of, you know, you need some veterans on this young roster. But in the end, I mean, I don't think it's hard to even think at the time that happened that this very easily could go wrong. And sure enough,
I just wonder, like, how much are we given any credit for? I mean, I know it's sad to talk about George Hill as the biggest name signing in recent Kings history, but is there any credit deserved there, where at least the narrative is that he got them in the room with bigger names than
Hill.
I mean, seriously though, yeah. Like, you look, I recently tweeted out.
Does Vince
out,
Carter
like,
go in this maybe?
The rest of this list is like, it's garbage. I mean, like, Aaron Aflalo is like high on the list of biggest contracts the Kings have signed outside of this. I think the second is Dwayne Dedman. So yeah. I mean, do you give him any credit for at least signing somebody?
Like, I guess, but I think it more so points to like the idea that we're hearing recently that like Vlade couldn't get people to sit down. Like, I don't think it's only Perry that could do this, I guess is my point. Like, there's so many other candidates that we're hearing being listed that I think would have decent connections and a respect level to them that could get a guy, especially the level of like a George Hill, to come to the table and at least have a conversation and have a chance of signing with the team. So sure, I mean, like, I could see where Perry maybe gets the credit for that, but I think he's far from the only candidate for this job that would be able to do that. And this is where we kind of move on to his time with the New York Knicks. And if you're all right with it, John, I think this is your area of expertise. You sure can kind of take the lead here and walk us through his tenure there.
Yeah, so we kind of you know, touched on it before. He comes in the middle of, I guess, what I'll call a Carmelo Anthony trade stalemate. There was actually, before he was hired, there was a report from Frank Isola, who had, I think he was still covering the team at the time, I honestly don't remember, that there was a trade with between the Knicks and the Rockets for Carmelo Anthony to go there that was at the 2-yard line. You know, obviously implication being that it was going to happen, which would have brought back, because there was, I mean, there was just no other way to make it work, Ryan Anderson's salary and, you know, who knows what future asset or something, draft pick, we really don't know. But nobody much wanted to do that deal. And that was the trade that, you know, it seemed like Steve Mills was angling to do. So let me, I guess I should probably set up the situation. So Phil Jackson was the president of basketball operations and Steve Mills at the time was the GM. And Phil Jackson was fired a couple days after the draft. And it was supposed to be David Griffin's job, but he got cold feet, depending on what you believe, either because Steve Mills signed Tim Hardaway Jr. to an offer sheet, or because he didn't have full control. Anyway, so the point is that Perry's walking into something of a not a great situation, because you have Steve Mills, who Jim Dolan at the time was dead set on maintaining a very important voice in basketball operations. So anyone who had to come in was going to have to work with Mills. That was going to be a prerequisite to the job. And also, obviously, working for James Dolan, who historically has not been someone that has been easy to work for. So, and there's the Mello thing going on. So you have all of this stuff. And he came in and he pulled off a really good deal with Carmelo Anthony. So, you know, found another trade partner in Oklahoma City. How much he personally smoothed things over with Mello to get him to kind of relent and join up with, you know, Russ and at the time PG. But it was a good deal. And they got back Cantor's contract and Doug McDermott, who's still a semi-interesting, you know, young-ish player at the time. And then the pick, of course, that became Mitchell Robinson. And, you know, that first season, like, he came in after the draft, after free agency, didn't really have a lot of wiggle room in terms of building the roster out that year. You know, he made some fringe moves. He signed Michael Beasley. I think, he signed Jared Jack. And it's like, but that, like, right off the bat, you could sense, like, okay, the Knicks had just drafted a rookie point guard in Frank Ntilikina. So what does Scott Perry do? He goes and signs Jared Jack, and then Jared Jack ends up playing 30 minutes a night. Or 25 minutes tonight, whatever it was. But I think probably more than a lot of Knicks fans would have liked, given the fact that they just invested in top 10 pick and a point guard. So season starts off very well, and they're winning some games. They're above 500, I think, into December. And then so Porzingis is playing well. They get to the trade deadline, and what happens at the trade deadline? They trade for Emmanuel Mudiay, another point guard. And that kind of is the first reminder that Perry has a type, right? He has a type of, like, these uber athletic, you know, usually bigger athletes for their position that they traditionally play, guys who maybe just aren't all that good at basketball. And again, bringing Mudiay into a situation, like, on the surface, yes, smart move. You got Emmanuel Mudiay for a pick that ended up being in, like, the 40s. He was still young. He was still interesting at the time. But was it the smartest move looking at the big picture of, all right, I got this young point guard here already. We need to invest time and minutes in him. So then KP goes down with the injury, and that season finishes out. And to me, you could pick a lot of things to pick bones with Scott Perry, you know, over his time here. Job number one when he took the GM job was to get the Knicks back in good graces with Kristaps Porzingis, because Phil Jackson had all but burned that bridge. And while there was some stuff that happened, like Fizdale went and visited, you know, KP and his Latvia, from everything I understood the situation, have heard about the situation, is like, basically, you know, KP was resistant to the organization's overtures, and rather than kind of going full bore and really trying to get him back in the into the fold and believing in the program, they went the other way. And Perry and Mills, and again, how much of this is Perry, how much of this is Mills, we don't know. But they, when the, you know, the following season, when the trade ultimately came down, Porzingis to Dallas, you know, I feel very confident in saying that they were as happy to pull off that move, sending KP out, for just like they did not want him here anymore, as much as he did not want to be here anymore. And that's on him. To me, it's the best young player the Knicks have had since Ewing. And then, you know, and obviously they did that with dreams of Durant in mind, which then gets you to the other major knock on the Perry regime, which is that they believed that, and again, this is the only rational explanation for why they would make that trade. They believed they had Durant in the bag, and obviously they did not have Durant in the bag. And there will be people who will swear up and down Durant was coming if he didn't tear the Achilles, but I have strong reason to believe otherwise. So he's taking big risks. The risks did not pan out. And he's putting, you know, his margin moves again for these guys like Hezonja, bringing Hezonja in, bringing Moutier in, bringing Beasley in. You know, there are situations where you bring those guys in, but I don't think that was, you know, this team. And then that gets us to last offseason, when essentially they had carte blanche to do whatever they wanted with the roster. They had more cap space than anybody in the league. They had more holes to fill than any team in the league. And what ended up happening was they found out that they weren't going to be getting Durant and, you know, whatever number two Durant wanted. And they put together a roster that didn't make any sense on paper. I've heard it was basically just a mad dash to get the best players that they could get who would sign for the least amount of years. And, you know, people, there are still Knicks fans who say that good job by him. He didn't sign anybody past one season and, other than Julius Randle, who he gave a second fully guaranteed year to. But again, if you're looking big picture, and if it's your job as a GM to put together a cogent roster around a young core that maybe isn't the best young core in the world, but, you know, Barrett, Mitch, you know, Frank Knox is interesting. He didn't do that. And nobody, I don't think anybody would look at this season in New York and say it was a success as far as we got the most we could have out of this year. And I guess the other thing I should mention is Kevin Knox. So, you know, there was a story actually that came out today from Ian Begley, who covers the Knicks here for Sportsnet New York, that they had Shea Gilgeous-Alexander in for a workout before that draft and decided not to pick him. They apparently were thinking very hard about Mikal Bridges, decided not to pick him. They decided not to take the chance on Michael Porter Jr. And Knox, well, you know,
all those guys can shoot.
And listen, in fairness, Knox was, that was supposed to be the one thing that Knox was going to be able to do is shoot. And his shot actually looked pretty good as a rookie, but then, you know, and I'm sorry to keep repeating myself here. What, like, there should have been an awareness that, like, okay, you throw this kid into the deep end as a rookie, you play him 30 minutes a night, you give him all the shots he could possibly want. They then did a 180 and basically had him, you know, be, I don't know, ninth on the depth chart, 10th, whatever, like not a prominent role. I went back and looked at the last 20 years worth of top 10 picks, and there had never been, other than like injury situations, there had never been a player who got as much usage and minutes as a rookie that had that big of a reduction from year one to year two. And then you ask yourself, well, why is that? He actually had a fairly, not a great good rookie year, but he was like rookie of the month in December. He got some old rookie team votes. Why would you do that? Well, you do it when you're trying to save your job, right? And that really gets to the core of Perry. He likes bringing in vets, guys who he feels will win more games now. He feels that's the best path towards building a team long term. And the only thing is he forgot that you need, you know, certain things in the NBA today to win games, like shooting. Like the fact that they banked on Julius Randle to be something of a stretch four, and like, I don't know, LeBron James light in terms of a playmaker, and do all that under a coach in David Fizdale, who was never much of an X's and O's genius. And again, Fizdale was a Perry hire. So I guess in short, I'm sorry, I've been talking for a long time, but I've spent a lot of time thinking about Scott Perry's tenure here. Were there some solid moves here and there? Yes. The Mitchell Robinson pick, you know, RJ, you know, we'll see what RJ Barrett is, even though that's the pick everybody expected them to make. They got a nice, some Charlotte picks from Willie Hernan Gomez. Like, there are some nice moves on the periphery, but if you're looking for a GM who's going to come in and has like a vision for what your organization is supposed to be and execute that vision, you know, acceptably, I just don't think Scott Perry has shown any evidence that he is your guy. Now, is he someone that is respected around the league and he has like a good scouting eye, and can he work well in difficult situations like he walked into here with having to work with Mills and work for Dolan? Yeah. So from that perspective, if you're looking at someone who's going to play nice with Joe Dumars and Vivek Ranadive, it's like, yeah, then Scott Perry might be your guy. But like a long-term big picture guy for Sacramento, I just, you know, I don't know. That's to me where I can't get from point A to point B.
Yeah. None of that is like too inspiring too much confidence in me, to be honest. And, you know, you said that Perry has a type of player that he likes the most. The more you talk about it, the more Fox seems to fit that, actually, is like a point guard that isn't a particularly great shooter, but does have really eye-popping athleticism.
And he works his butt off, too, which is, I think, another – he likes workers. And Knox is that way, too. But, again, you got to put yourself in a situation to succeed.
Yeah, no, definitely. I can see that. And Fox, I mean, Fox seems to be on the higher end of outcomes of any picks that he may have influenced so far. But, yeah, I want to dig in on this last offseason a little bit more because,
sure,
you know, you mentioned it, but when, you know, as soon as you knew that Durant and co weren't coming, you know, were you on that side? You mentioned kind of it was split where some fans were like, good, just get these short-term deals in there, sign Taj Gibson to a, you know, whatever, $8 million deal, whatever it was. Or were you looking for something else?
No, I think there was definitely merit to keeping yourself liquid, I guess, is the best way to say it. But at the same time, I think that I've heard from enough people to feel very confident in saying this, like, Scott Perry is incredibly proud of the fact that he cleaned the books here in New York. Like, he is not bashful about talking about it to others. Because, you know, for most of the last two decades, the Knicks have been a team where it just filled with one bad contract after another. And so he was so dead set on not becoming that I think he may have missed some other opportunities out there. Like, for instance, he signed the Julius Randle contract. So that's two fully guaranteed years with a third partially guaranteed for $4 million. Julius Randle is the last thing you should have on a team without a point guard that could shoot, with a center who can't shoot, and with RJ Barrett, who came in as a rookie who really couldn't shoot. If instead he, you know, would have maybe looked at bringing in a Ricky Rubio, and again, not that Ricky Rubio is the best shooter in the world, but to, like, Ricky Rubio wanted a third guaranteed year. Scott Perry clearly was not willing to do that. And yet that is the type of guy who would have taken what else is on the roster and maybe made it make sense. But there just wasn't that kind of, it sounds weird to say, like, signing a guy to 3 years guaranteed is outside the box thinking, but I think for Perry, that would have been a little outside the box.
Sundays are coming back in the NFL. With NFLSundayTicket.tv, you can stream every live out-of-market NFL game every Sunday afternoon on your favorite devices. Plus Red Zone and DirecTV Fantasy Zone channels. Never miss your favorite teams and favorite players. No matter where you live, NFLSundayTicket.tv is your key to the most glorious Sundays ever. Use the promo code BLUEWIRE at checkout and get 15% off your subscription. Visit NFLSundayTicket.tv and use promo code BLUEWIRE.
Part of the issues of, like, you know, you pointed out the really interesting bringing in Jared Jack right after signing or drafting Neil Aquina. And yeah. I mean, that's like eerily similar to drafting De'Aaron Fox and bringing in George Hill. And yeah. He didn't stay around to really necessarily, you know, maybe learn from that or have to deal with it. But that's kind of the same mistake pretty close back to back there. And then I get really hesitant looking at, you know, re-upping with Mario Hezonja and Elfrid Payton, like not giving up on guys that he drafted back in his tenure in Orlando, right?
Yeah, he definitely, again, he has his guys, and he, you know, like, I wouldn't, if he ends up in Sacramento, I wouldn't be surprised to see him bring in someone from his past, maybe even someone from the Knicks, who knows?
Just draft Denny. He's pretty much Mario Hezonja.
Oh God, one of us might end up with Denny after see how it goes tonight, so watch your tongue. You know, but like, it's, and there, you know, there's been rumors for a while that Perry was not the biggest fan of Neil Aquina, and that's whatever, that's fine. But I still think, even if you inherit a player who's not the player type you want, you want to give him the best chance to succeed. And, you know, it's his, Neil Aquina's lack of offensive game has kind of become a punchline at this point. But there were moments early in his rookie year where he showed real promise, and yet there was never really an investment in him to see what he could really become from a play calling perspective, from any. And then that, you know, to fast forward 2 years to this season, you know, Steve Mills was fired in early February. The team was, they had whatever it was, the second or third worst record in the league. They made the Marcus Morris trade, in which they sent him out for Mo Harkless. Everybody around here is like, okay, well, Mo Harkless probably going to get bought out. What ends, you know, and it opens the door for Knox to start. What ends up happening? Mo Harkless starts, plays 25 to 30 minutes a night, and Knox is on the bench getting like 10, 15 minutes for a team that's essentially in last place. So, and I know, because I asked the interim coach at the time, Mike Miller, about his rotation decisions and lineup decisions, and he would say openly, him and Perry communicated on a daily basis. They were in lockstep about who was playing and, you know, what roles they would have. So he, right down to the end of this season, felt like, no, I'm going to continue playing veterans. We're going to continue to try to win games. Would that have changed if the season continued and we would have seen the last 15 games? Maybe. But, you know, he is a guy that I think is set in his ways. Let me say that. I think it's probably the best way to put it.
So what's his current situation and going forward? You know, I'm not, you know, the executive contracts are not nearly as accessible, obviously, as player contracts, but do you have an understanding of what his situation is? And really, sure. not that contracts really can stop a move like that, as we saw him going from the Kings to the Knicks right at the beginning of his contract. But what is his outlook right now, and do you want him to stick around?
I've been you know, something else I should mention that's a positive. Perry, he is, by all indications, very good at setting up like plans of and preparation for the draft. He's very organized, like all of that. So like, he has done everything to set up the Knicks for this draft, you know, whether it ends up occurring October 16th or not. And I'm sure he has done work to set up their free agent board and all of those things. So I think if you were to walk out the door today, that would probably not be ideal, because he, I'm sure, to some degree is an important figure behind the scenes. Again, just in terms of all the systems that he set up. But since Leon Rose has been officially hired, he's brought on Walt Perrin from the Utah Jazz, who's now the director of college scouting. And there's already been reports that if Perry leaves for Sacramento, you know, Perrin is going to kind of, he'll be the GM. At the very least, you know, when you think of a GM, right, you think of the guy who is essentially, he's going to be making the decisions for an organization. I think the impression that I have gotten and has been made around here is that he does not quite have that level of power anymore. It's, you know, Leon is here. He brought in Brock Aller, who's like a cap specialist from Cleveland. I mentioned Perrin. He brought in Frank Zanin, who's the director of, who's now the director of pro scouting from Oklahoma City. Again, bringing in guys from like really good organizations. And my understanding is that it's much more of a team approach in the front office right now. So I think his power has lessened. We'll see. I think that's why I think Sacramento would be interesting to him, because I think as much as he does want to make it work here in New York, and I think he would figure out a way to be a good part of like the team here, the front office team, I mean, you know, I think everybody wants to get a chance to call the shots, and it seems like he would be getting a chance to call the shots there. At the very least.
Definitely what it sounds like in that Shams Amick piece. The quote, while Perry has one season remaining on his deal with the Knicks, who recently hired former agent Leon Rose as team president above Perry, a source with knowledge of his situation said he would be interested in returning to the Kings so long as he had the final basketball say. Yeah. Reads to me like that's not currently the case in New York. And yeah, I mean, I would love for a entire front office team to go on in Sacramento. You know, at very least, one thing you can say for Perry is, you know, there's two decades of experience here in a front office. And, you know, it's a compared to Divock coming in with hardly any experience. And, you know, you shouldn't pick someone just because it's an upgrade over a poor decision prior. Because like I said, I believe there's better candidates out there, but at very least, like, I would say that, you know, Perry has a good amount of experience under his belt, and there is, you know, there's some outlier situations that, you know, really look bad. Obviously, like that Ibaka trade might even be the worst one there. But there's also okay moves. Like I worry about, it seems like a tendency to, you know, try to win now when he probably should be looking to tank and acquire young talent, or at least play that young talent. So, yeah, I mean, I can comfortably say Perry's not my guy. It wouldn't be the worst thing, I guess, but I mean, I think it would be a mistake with potentially some of the other candidates out there. How do you kind of feel about Perry's potential for the job here, Rich?
I don't feel good about it. Something's not right here. I just think it's strange that there's this reports that if Perry were hired, he could have potential, you know, final call. As much control as really possible. But then there's also these reports where we've seen conflicting word on if Dumars would be having the final call, and now they're saying he wouldn't, you know, Perry wouldn't be answering to Dumars, or whoever's hired wouldn't be answering to Dumars. But if Dumars picks Perry with that connection, I don't know. I just feel like maybe we're going to be reverting back to these decision making by tandem or in groups and by committee. It gets very muddy with who makes what decisions, and that's never really clear. There's very few organizations where it's clear, but the experience doesn't really mean anything to me. I would be just as happy to bring in an exciting young executive that didn't have 20 years of experience. And just kind of, as we've been talking, I went through and I've been adding up wins and losses of the teams that he's ran. And in the last decade, his teams are 281 wins to 589 losses.
That doesn't sound right.
Average season, of 26 wins per season, or at least a winning percentage that equates out to 26 wins per season. No winning seasons, even if you go back further than 10 years, no winning seasons until you get all the way back to that first stint with Detroit, where he was not even an executive, or at least not a high-ranking executive. So, yeah, man, not Not stoked. I'll be honest. Not stoked.
The last thing I'll say really quick is it's, you know, the situation there, it really does remind me so much of the situation that Perry walked into here, which was which is why I think Knick fans were very happy to get Perry, because it's like, okay, we just finished with Phil Jackson, who whether he kind of started to figure out by the end, it was very clear that he was a coach doing a job that he was not prepared to do. And that lasted for far too long. So he was out, and then you had Steve Mills, who was, you know, a business person, and was running a basketball team. So with Perry, it's like, all right, this is a professional. We know he knows like the basics, right? He put one foot in front of the other, so to speak. And he did that. And he, I think, repaired, like, I couldn't help but laugh when I read in the Shams piece that, like, Perry would be seen as, when he went to Sacramento, he, like, helped repair relationships around the league and stuff like that. Like, he did that stuff here, too, because Phil had pissed a lot of people off. And then, you know, Steve came in, he worked with Scott Perry, the whole thing. So, like, against, like, your top guys, like your Wagners from Toronto and Zarin from Boston, and like you're really upper echelon. Like these are the people who have not yet had an opportunity to run a team that should probably get a chance. Like, are those guys really going to be okay with whatever this Dumars GM Vivek love triangle setup is? Perry will probably be okay with it, you know? That's the thing. So I don't know.
Yeah, the hope definitely that whoever they are able to pitch to, yeah. I mean, some of these upper echelon candidates are gonna want a final say in everything and not have that muddied by, you know, the say of Dumars and such. And that's obviously the hope here. And you know, the last thing I kinda wanna get your thoughts on here, John, or we are recording this about an hour and a half before the draft lottery. And I'm wondering, you know, New York's sitting here with the 6 best odds. Who are sort of your guys in this draft that you're really eyeing?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about a little beforehand. I'm pretty high on LaMelo Ball just because I think I don't think there's really any elite skills in this draft. Other than, I would say, arguably his passing, his vision, and to a slightly lesser extent, his handle. There's a ton of question marks with him. I think there's reason to believe that New York is not reason to believe there. It New York is not the best situation for him to be successful in. But you know, I think they, you know, I said it on my podcast the other day, and I got some pushback on it. I think other than Detroit, New York has less top end talent than any team in the league. Like maybe Cleveland, you could have an argument, but so they just have to get guys in their building who have the potential to make an all-star team someday. And to me, the clearest path to that is LaMelo. So I don't say I'm all in on him, but I would be, that's why I'll, you know, that's the guy I'll be hoping to get. I think Hayes is a really interesting prospect. I think he, you know, he's got a lot of what you want in the NBA today, even though, again, you'd like to be drafting a guy who has more than a 30% three-point, you know, conversion rate. Although his most of that is brought down by his catch-and-shoot numbers. His off-the-dribble numbers are actually outstanding. So I'd be thrilled with Hayes, too. And I guess
what do you think of Toppin? I've kind of fallen for that pairing with Robinson, even though he's a little bit older guy.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He's the one guy I don't want because, yeah, I think it sounds great. Like Toppin can stretch the floor, but like it just reminds me of the conversations that I was having last offseason about Julius Randle. Like Julius Randle had hit, what did he hit? He shot a respectable 3-point percentage in New Orleans the previous season. It's like, okay, it's fine. He's gonna be out there. He's gonna be shooting threes. Like, put aside for the fact, even let's say Obi Toppin walks in, you know, the league next year as a 38% three-point shooter. That dude wants to live on the block. Like, that's where he wants to be. That's where he wants to eat. He wants to average 20 a game, and he wants to – he's not Danilo Gallinari-ing it out, you know, or to use a recent Kings example, you know, Bielitsa. Like, that's not Obi Toppin. He wants to be down low. And to me, the one elite thing on the Knicks roster currently is Mitchell Robinson's verticality. So, to me, I want to give him as much room to work and try to put pieces around him that will you know, maximize his potential, and RJ's obviously too. And so I'm not for Toppin. He's like, honestly, him and Wiseman are the only two guys that I'm really like not, I'm not there on. I think it'd be an interesting draft though. Like, nothing, like I was saying, telling you guys before we started recording, nothing would shock me that they did.
I personally have only two guys that I want in New York. We've done a bunch of like mock drafts on this show. And there's only two guys that I want New York to draft. LaMelo, obviously, if they move up or if they trade up. But if, say, they're jumped by two or three teams, they fall to, like, pick 8 or 9, whatever. I would not mind seeing some Cole Anthony New York Knicks, because you just need a hyped point guard. You need, like, a high-level, like, in terms of hype, in terms of name recognition. I don't care if it's like, I think the first thing when we did our Cole Anthony episode, breaking him down, I was like, this guy is going to lead the Knicks to 25 wins for the next 5 years. I just believe it.
Well, the Knicks have to take him, or else Rich is going to try to get Sacramento to take him at 12. And I hate that idea.
So it's funny you bring up Cole, because again, we've spent this whole episode talking about Scott Perry. Like, if there's two guys in the entire draft that I'm like, oh, those are guys that Scott Perry would pick. It's Obi Toppin, and it's Cole Anthony. And I've gone back and forth on Cole, because I think for as much as we, you know, NBA nerds like us get lost in the weeds of all the different things like shot profile and like, he's like all, like checking off all the different boxes of what a guy could do, what a guy could be elite in, what a guy's terrible at. Like, you need shot makers, and that dude profiles potentially as a really, really good shot maker, even at the next level. I just think there's such a slim chance, like so much has to go right for him to reach that. Like, even like I shudder to put Kemba Walker's name and Cole Anthony's name in the same sentence, because like, it's just, again, so much would need to go right. And I just, it's too big of a chance for me. The point guard, actually, if they like stayed at like 8 or 9, I'm all up about Lewis from Alabama, Kyra Lewis. I think I know he's mocked. Some people have him mocked in like the 20s, which I think is ridiculous, because he's a year younger than Cole Anthony, or more than a year younger than Cole Anthony, even though he was a sophomore. But, you know, dude has blazing speed, great defensive instincts. He's, you know, maybe not the most transcendent passer, but really good pick and roll player. Can make some nice whip passes. I personally buy the shot. And yeah, I think he was like top 10 in college basketball in minutes last year. He doesn't sit down. He's an energizer bunny. So if they were to not move up, I think that's the guy that I would probably want them to take, unless they took like a Devin Vassell, who is just going to be, you know, what more do you want than a Devin Vassell in the league today? So yeah, that's kind of where I stand.
Well, it's exciting because the Knicks do get to remake their team. Really, I mean, I just want to go back to that point about Perry tearing down the salary cap. They really can become whatever. I think the only guaranteed money on the books for 2021-22 is Joakim Noah's money.
Well, they have some rookie contracts, but other than their rookie contracts, and there's also
I think those are options. If they really want to decline Barrett, they can get out of that.
I guess they could get out of Barrett's money. They also, and actually no, so Julius Randle has $4 million guaranteed coming to him in 21-22 also, sadly. So there is a very distinct possibility we could have $10 million in dead money on our cap in 2021-22 season.
Final question for you. I reached out to ask you about this yesterday, to bring it back to the Kings.
Sure.
I wanted to get your thoughts on a Buddy Hield trade to New York. The reason why I thought of New York is because of that cap space. And I ran a trade past you, and it's gonna run in the B soon because you didn't tell me I was completely insane. So that's enough for me to put it forward. But just in general, I mean, any interest in Hield as an outside observer? You know, where's his stock? Do you think that a team like the Knicks would want to use any? I mean, they could, with the way their cap is, they could add Hield's contract and still have like two max slots.
Well, that would be a little, I don't know if they could, it would take a lot of maneuvering. But to me, if, and I've trust me, I've thought up and down, because again, the word around here is that Leon Rose is going to want to bring in a name, you know, a some instant upgrade for next season, and not 38-year-old Carmelo Anthony, although I expect him to be back. So like, Hield checks that box because Hield is a name, and he has, you know, his elite skill is the elite skill that the Knicks are missing more than anything on paper. And I guess that's going to be my pushback against why I personally wouldn't want Buddy Hield. I think, yes, shooting is, you know, you can't win if you don't have shooting in the NBA today, and shooting off movement and elite shooting, shooting with range. It's like, just, you know, turn on any game today. But I think just like to pay that money for a guy who, that's, and we're not talking about Klay Thompson here in terms of his level of shot making, where it's like a level below that, I think. And that's no, I hope that doesn't come off as any, you know, any something against Buddy Hield. Like, Klay Thompson is one of the best shooters of all time. But I, like, Hield to me is a level below that. But when you take into account the defense, and when you take into account, like, you know, we're watching teams now in the bubble, it's like you're just reminded of the value of smart playmakers who can make others around them better. And you guys obviously would know better than me. I personally don't have the impression that Hield is that. So it's like, if you're giving me elite shooting and really good defense, yeah, I'm paying $20 million. If you're giving me elite shooting and like passable defense and some playmaking, happily paying $20 million a year. If you're giving me elite shooting and I don't have that other thing. So for me, it's less about what New York would have to give up to get him, and it's more about just like taking on that contract and that money, because it does last for four more years, because extension hasn't even kicked in yet. And, you know, the report from Woj today with, you know, the NBA maybe setting an artificial cap because they're not going to be able, it would dip below the current cap number if they went off of the financials. Like, this is not the economic climate that if I'm the Knicks and I have all the leeway in the world, that I want to be taking on $94 million, especially, you know, and just to put a cap on it, especially when we're looking at the bubble and seeing like your Gary Trent Jr.'s and your, you know, the guys in Miami, and like every team, it seems like, I mean, freaking Grayson Allen was draining threes for Memphis. It's like, there are shooters out there. And are they as good a shooter as Buddy Hield? No. But they're really good. And I think you could find those guys, maybe not on the scrap heap, but you don't need to pay $20 million a year for them. So I hope that doesn't come off as crazy, because I don't watch as much Kings basketball as you do, but that's my impression of Buddy Hield. So,
very reasonable, understandable that, you know, stock gone down. And yeah, it's funny, we were happy with the deal at the time, and yeah, now feel a little bit different after, you know, what could be pointed at as a little bit of a misutilization of Hield and his talents. But yeah, like,
I'm just curious, would you guys, if you could get rid of him, like, this is maybe a little bit too absurd an example, but if some team was just willing to take his contract for, like, you know, a second round pick, like that, how would that, I'm curious, how would that go over in Sacramento?
Poorly. Very poorly. Poorly.
Okay. Very, I mean, poorly? Okay.
It would go poor, but I kind of don't think it's terrible, because they're going to end up having to choose between Bogey Buddy.
Now, well, Bogey is a guy, if you want to talk to me about Bogey, we could sit here for another hour talking about Bogdanovich. That's, you want to talk about a guy that I want to see on the Knicks? Oh, goodness.
Well, that's interesting. I mean, they might have to sign and trade Bogey if they if they can't figure out a place for Buddy to go. That's, I mean, you're speaking my language, because I've been on that train for a minute, just saying this isn't going to go how people think it's going to go. People think that the Kings are going to be able to trade Harrison Barnes for an asset, trade Buddy Hield for first, you know, a high first round pick.
That's like, it's here in New York with Julius Randle. That people are like, hey, let's trade Randle to the, you know, the Bulls to get like Lauri Markkanen. Like, that's a little bit too extreme. But like, if you don't want your players, the odds are that other teams don't want your players either.
Right. And the Knicks could really use an elite shooter, and they have all the money in the world going forward. And you're sitting here like, I don't know if I'd give up Dennis Smith Jr. for him. Like,
you know, but again, it's not about Dennis Smith Jr. It's about paying the
No. And I agree. I mean, I just think that's with the COVID especially, I just think it's not going to go how Kings fans want it to go.
Right. I'm curious, is there a number that you guys have in mind? Like, what do you think Bogey – do you think they have a cap on what they what they'll give Bogey this summer?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he's a 20 million guy after the COVID thing. Like, my number I've kind of had, and this was before that, was like 4 years, 70. I wouldn't be surprised if that was a little lower. Are you kind of in the same range with that, Rich?
Yeah, in that ballpark. It is really hard to say with the financial struggles. Like, I don't think it's completely out of the question that Sacramento capitulates because they're suffering that badly financially. I don't know how severe it is. I do know that, well, I've read that the Kings are responsible for Golden 1 Center as well. So it's not like they are paying a lease on that. They're responsible for the finances of the new arena. I'll double check if that's the case. But that's one of the things that Amick has put forward as a team that is struggling financially. And that's one of the reasons he cited. So, I mean, we've heard speculation that they'll just decline, or not decline, but rather waive Nemanja Bjelica just to get off of that money.
Really?
And that's a good player for $7 million.
Oh,
and
it, I love like, Bjelica.
So these are the moves that I don't think are impossible. I think they, yeah, I think in reality, they, I mean, they've put themselves in a terrible position, because if they just let Bogdanović go, that could be a crippling thing. You can't just walk, you can't let talent walk out the door if you're already as bad as the Kings are. But it's just, I think it's really possible that that happens.
I don't see the team. I mean, maybe I'm missing a team. But again, we keep going back to it, especially in this climate. Like, who's the team offering him, you know, 4 for 80? I personally don't see that team out there, but maybe I'm missing someone.
Yeah, maybe 460 with the climate.
Like, I could see a team going high, like to he's a restricted free agent, so it has to, well no yeah it's a restricted free agent, so it has to be at least 2 years, but like a two plus one, or even just like a straight 2 year deal for an offer sheet. At like a lot of money. Like, I don't know. I'm going to be watching that situation closely, because I was on a podcast earlier this year, and I think I said some absurd thing. Like, I would give up like both, like we own Dallas's picks in like 2021 and 2023. I was like, I think I said I would give up both Dallas picks and both, we own the Hornets second rounders, this year and next year. I think I said I would give up all four of those picks. And I think I named a player for Bogdanović, and everybody thought it was lunacy. But I personally am just extraordinarily, I'm a big fan of his. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think we should take that deal. I mean, what I've been looking at is like, you know, Frankie Smokes and Dennis Smith and maybe Kevin Knox or pick 27 for, but either Buddy or Bogey, like, I think that that's probably how this is going to
– well, yeah. It'll be interesting if – you know, I mean, we'll see how long the search – I'll put big air quotes around the word search process. we'll see how long the search process takes. If we assume that it's going to take 2 months, which dovetails nicely with Perry staying on here through the draft and free agency, and free agency starts and Bogey's sitting there and with, you know, the qualifying offer on the table and Perry is all of a sudden your GM, you know, he drafted Kevin Knox. Kevin Knox hasn't worked out here in New York, although we just hired his college coach as one of our assistants. I don't know. I could, you know, crazier things have happened, right?
Yeah. Well, can't thank you enough, John, for coming on the show and taking the time out of your day. Just want to promote some of the work you do. You know, Nick's Film School, you mentioned the Strickland that started up. I see the Step Back here. Am I missing anything else? You got a lot going on. The Hoop Spy with Adam Taylor.
My boy, who said to say hi. I told him before that I recorded with him. We had a spot with Jeff Goodman earlier today. I mean, if you for some reason want to read about Nick's takes or listen to Nick's takes, just Google Nick's Film School. I have a daily newsletter that I send out every day, as it were, or every weekday, and then a podcast, Nick's Film School podcast. So those are the two main things, and then I have some other stuff around the edges, and definitely check out like I said, that conversation with Jeff Goodman was very good. The Hoop Spy, where we got to interview George Karl, actually, of all people, your old coach. We interviewed him a few weeks ago. That was fun. That's where you can find me.
Awesome. Thanks so much.
Yep. And thanks to everybody for listening to this episode of the King's Pulse podcast. Go support the great guys at the King's Herald there. Take a look at their Patreon, support local King's coverage. And thanks to everybody for listening to this episode. You'll hear from us again in the next couple of days here.
Sports are coming back, and so are your chances to bet on your favorite teams and events. Major League Baseball and basketball is finally kicking off this week, and there's no better place to start wagering than our exclusive partners, BetOnline. Check out all the odds, futures, and props to bet on, all available 24/7. And with the return of sports, BetOnline sat down with former pro players Eddie George, Harold Reynolds, and seven-time NBA champion, we'll go six-time NBA champion, Robert Horry. See what they had to say and what it'll be like playing without fans in a series they're calling Fandemic. Visit betonline.ag for all your odds and up-to-date sports news. Remember to use promo code BLUEWIRE to receive your new welcome bonus. That's promo code BLUEWIRE. BetOnline, your online